a ballot battle over whether the state could use real property taxes to fund public schools and hike teacher salaries is heating up with a new twist. The Hawaii Supreme Court agreed to hear a request by the four counties to invalidate a question that voters will see on the November ballot. Last month, the lower court judge declined to throw out the question ahead of the vote. A hearing before Hawaii's High Court is now set for October 18th. The Hawaii State Teachers Association has been leading the charge to amend the state constitution, what some refer to as the Con Am, to use a new property tax surcharge on investment property to help fund public education. Opponents include all four county mayors, the Hawaii Chamber of Commerce, and a political action committee called the Affordable Hawaii Coalition. Stanley Lau is chairman.
The constitutional amendment has no language that states there is a $1 million floor. The intentions that the HSTA says is that it taxes just international outside investors. That is not the case at all. The language is not there. It will not be on the ballot. Furthermore, this is an additional tax that is being created that will affect the entire state of Hawaii. And that's what's not being talked about. I think there's a lot of confusion when the children and the teachers are all mixed into this. The group here is absolutely for quality public education. No one in our group is against public education at all. And I think the HSTA in pinning us against public education has done everyone a disservice. We are by no means against public education.
And Hawaii County Mayor Harry Kim flew to Oahu yesterday to underscore why he thinks the amendment is off base.
I resent any kind of citing, finger pointing that this is for teachers, this is for students, and if you are not for it, you are against the education system, you're against teachers. The question is this to me. Should you put a constitutional amendment to take away the authority of property tax that county governments have? I don't care who you are, you will be affected one way or the other. When I wanted to balance our budget that first came in here a year and a half ago, we were short a few million dollars. We consciously tried to make the tax system as fair as possible to make living here affordable, to have people trust their government in regards to, as much as they don't like it, who likes it, that we are trying to make the tax proposal as fair as possible to meet our expenses. This is what is taken away from the county governments. What is the input you think of county government will be on this 20% hike? What do you think the people's input will be on the island of Hawaii? If I sound a little irritated, it's because I am plenty irritated. I'm asking all voters of this land, including teachers, this is not against you. I'm an ex-teacher. Study this, ask the right questions, and you're gonna know how poor this has been written. Sure, everybody's for kids, but make it right. This is wrong.
Both Mayor Kim and Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell stressed the importance of property taxes as the main revenue source available to county governments. They fear in the future, state lawmakers could ultimately be able to use the new tax authority to raise rates for any kind of real estate or use the money for something else besides education. Both mayors are calling for a financial audit of the Department of Education before raising additional taxes. Members of the business community are against the ballot question. Sherry Minor McNamara is the president of the Chamber of Commerce of Hawaii. Her organization has donated $600,000 to oppose the referendum.
Many businesses rent or lease their office space. And so we believe this new tax will add to the rising cost of doing businesses. In fact, we sent out an email a few weeks ago asking, what keeps you up at night? And they said, it's the cost of doing business in Hawaii. It seems like every year there is an additional cost. And as we all know, the cost of doing business in Hawaii is very expensive, and we are up there and considered as the worst place to do business. So again, we are concerned about this constitutional amendment. And as Dan mentioned, it does not exclude commercial property.
Corey Rosenlee, the president of the union, was joined by two school community groups who think more should be done to support public education.
This represents over the 50% of schools in Hawaii that are over 65 years old. At this school, you will find bathrooms that have broken stalls. You will have water fountains with black mold on it, and that is a problem that we have across the state. We have children learning in classrooms that have holes in the roof. We have classrooms that when it rains, it pours into the classroom. Our children are learning on broken desks, and unfortunately, every day we put them into environments that are not conducive to learning. And the main reason is because we do not fund our schools well. We rank 45th in the nation in per pupil expenditure adjusted for cost of living. Just this past week, Hawaii was ranked as the worst place in the nation for teachers. And since 2010, we have seen the amount of teachers leaving Hawaii has increased by 84%. We have over 1,000 classrooms that do not have a qualified teacher. About one third of our students, or 60,000 children every day, go to school and do not have a qualified teacher. We have got to increase funding for our schools, and the way to do that is we are looking to tax second homes over $1 million. Our opponents are using fear to try to scare people. In Hawaii, less than 4% of homes are second homes over $1 million. These wealthy investors cannot win this ballot question on their own. So the only way they're going to win is by convincing people to vote against their self-interest and to vote against their own children. And to do that, they're going to scare everyone by saying that we're going to go after renters, and we're going to kick grandma out of her house, and we're going to close all businesses. That is not true, that is deceptive, and they're doing that only in the interest of scaring people. Not once have they ever offered up an answer of how they're going to improve our schools. All they are saying is, we don't want this tax, and they don't want to do anything afterwards.
In response to concerns that this amendment would give the state legislature too much latitude, Rosenlee outlined a multi-step process that would include writing legislation that specifies which properties would be taxed. He didn't oppose an audit of DOE, but said that calling for an audit is simply a delaying tactic. Deborah Von Upson is with the group Parents for Public Schools of Hawaii. She argues that more needs to be done to help students and teachers.
2 years ago, we did a survey of all of our legislators here in Hawaii, and we found that out of 76, 66 responded. We asked them if they had gone to private school or public school, and if they sent their children to public or private, or their grandchildren. Out of the 66 respondents, 24 had school-aged children. 11 sent them to private schools, almost half. How can we get people in this state to understand that we can't deal with lacks in our public school system simply by sending kids to private school? We have got to create equity so that all the students have a fair chance.
The Hawaii Supreme Court hearing is set for the same week that the Office of Elections is to begin mailing out our ballots. You're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to the St. Andrew Schools, which includes the Priory School for Girls, the Prep for Boys, and Queen Emma Preschool.
All right, thanks so much, Bill and Ku'uwehi. This is The Conversation, and Howard Nussbaum has been coming to Hawaii for the past 20 years. He is president of the American Resort Development Association. 4 decades after timeshares first emerged on the scene in the visitor world of accommodations, it has morphed into a stable section of the tourist industry. Nussbaum shared his take on what timeshare does for the local economy, as well as its place in the face of competition from online booking platforms. New timeshare properties have emerged on scene across the state, and growth has been steady.
I feel like we have come of age at timeshare. It's like, I think everyone always knew that Hawaii was good for timeshare, but I think there's a realization today that timeshare is also good for Hawaii. terms of its economic impact, employment, evening out the peaks and valleys of the economy or geopolitical events that, you know, Hawaii tourism is so susceptible to. So I think there is a recognition that having a robust timeshare industry within the accommodation mix is really good for Hawaii.
And we have seen record numbers of tourists. How does that fit with the timeshare snapshot?
You know, hotels and timeshare are conjoined twins. One can't really be that successful without the other. That's why you see such great mixed-use products. You know, for a traveler who comes to Hawaii for the first time, they're going to stay in a hotel, maybe even the second time. They fall in love with Hawaii. They want to come back year after year. They're going to buy a timeshare or rent a condo. And who knows? There may come a time in their life when they're more affluent and have more time and are retired. They might want to buy a vacation home. So I think timeshare is a way to get more market share from that visitor that loves Hawaii.
And I know the Hotel Workers Union prefers to have just regular hotels.
I think there's a misnomer there. And by the way, I come from a family of union members, so I'm certainly not anti-union. But I remember in the early 90s speaking with travel agents who said, we have to stop the internet. Because, you know, gosh, you know, it was a lot better when people called me up and I booked a plane ticket for them in a hotel room and I made 15%. Today, people do that themselves. That doesn't mean that there was anything wrong with those travel agents. And the ones that are successful today are ones who specialized in a destination and become experts on that and work, and they work with crews and others. So there is a new life for it. Timeshare resorts need housekeepers. They need people to check them in. They need people to park the car. Those jobs are available. And you're guaranteed. Our occupancy is so strong, and it is no matter what, whether there was a storm last week. I remember after Aniki, Kauai came back so quickly because of timeshare. You know, it does stabilize. So I think there are many advantages. I know I've spoken to housekeepers that chose to switch from the hotel side to the timeshare side at Hilton Hawaiian Village because they got more hours in a steady basis. So I think it's a misnomer that that's a loss of jobs. But
what about the aspect of foreclosures?
It's a lot easier. We have a very expedited non-judicial foreclosure process because the resort or the HOA that's governing it or the developer, depending on where it is in sales, has access to it. They have keys to the inventory. It's not like when a bank takes back a house and they've got to go find a realtor, they got to find a management company, they got to rent it, they got to clean it up. We already have the keys. We're already cleaning the unit every day. We already have a sales line. We already have a management. So, I mean, not that anyone wants default, but the ability to resell that interest and to cleanse the title is not an issue.
Okay. And so what's the snapshot? What's the picture that we've been able to glean with our data?
Oh, so nearly 32,000, to be exact, 31,727 jobs are in the state of Hawaii because of timeshare, with nearly 18,000 of those being directly employed at the resort. The rest are induced or indirect. $1.8 billion in labor income, an economic output of $5.3 billion. State and local taxes of $263 million. But I think the really big number, the one that excites me the most, is the local offsite consumer spending, $1.3 billion. That's 4,788 average per party of four. And that's off property. So when you're staying at your timeshare, it's already prepaid. You're not facing a $4,000 American Express bill at the end of the week. Okay, so you feel teenage rich. You got money in your pocket, and you're going to spend it diversely. You're going to spend it at the grocery store because a couple nights during the breakfast, you're going to cook in the unit. It's a lot easier. 21 meals in 7 days with small children. You don't want to go out for every meal, but you do want to go out for some meals. So the restaurant sees that impact. The art gallery, I want to take something home, show my friends. I bought it at my place in Hawaii. That's very cool. And then, again, there's also just the diverse spending that we have of any consumer on attractions. And the prepaid nature of it and the returning nature of it makes that spending even deeper. And that's why I think so many communities are eager to have resort communities are eager to have timeshare in their mix.
And so what's the breakdown per island?
So basically there are about 12,000 jobs that are here in Oahu, 12,700. 9,500 in Maui, 5,938 in Kauai, and 3,400 on the Big Island, you know, with the tragedy of the volcano this year, I think the Big Island is going to really value its timeshare owners because they are going to be coming back. They were still coming no matter what. That the prepaid nature of the product, I mean, I'm embarrassed to share this with you because I'm a little chubby, but if somebody gave me a coupon for a free lunch at the restaurant across the street from where I work, I'm guessing there's days that I wasn't hungry and I'd still go over and eat. And, you know, when you own your vacation, you're going to take it.
Are there certain areas, you know, based on where folks live, you know, that they buy into timeshares here in Hawaii? I mean, I know Japan is popular.
I think there's like 60,000 plus owners from Japan. I see Chinese travelers. I mean, some of it is location. Some of it is cultural. I mean, you know, Hawaii is, you know, the golden people. It's a mix of so many cultures. But you have the assets of beautiful islands in the middle of the Pacific, tropical breezes, iconic images. You know, there is somebody right now buying a timeshare in Myrtle Beach or Branson, Missouri or Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and one of the reasons they're buying it is because they want to go, you know, to Hawaii. They want to exchange to Hawaii. So there's Hawaii is a big driver. But you also have the infrastructure of a very sophisticated city. So there are many great island communities around the world, but they may not have the electric grid that you have. They may not have the sewer system that you have. They may not have the convenience. So this is, you know, it's a very first world place, but with a beauty that is rarely be able to be found in the first world.
With the storms that we've had and with the popularity of vacation rentals, you know, Airbnb, the online platforms, the concern has always been, well, if there are folks that are living out of the resort area in someone's home, will they know how to react in a storm? You know, what do you do? Where do you go? So what's the picture for timeshare owners?
Well, for timeshare owners, you know, we have a lot of safety and security. We have health department inspections. We have fire safety. We follow the same rules that hotels do for ADA and, you know, Americans with Disabilities Act. In addition, we have key control and cybersecurity of your credit card. You know, also, we're professionally managed. You're not going to open a drawer and find something you didn't want to find, nor are you going to find a lack of cleanliness. Or most of all, somebody coming into the unit in the middle of the night goes, oh, yeah, I'm the roommate, as you were. I'm not against Airbnb or the new sharing economy. My gosh, how could I be? We were the original Zipcar. We were the original sharing economy over 40 years ago. I do know that it's natural for the marketplace to get ahead of the regulatory environment. So we were born in the mid-70s in this country. It wasn't until 1981 that we had our first legislation. But that has made us stronger. And it was because of those consumer protections that allowed companies like Marriott and Disney and Hilton and Wyndham and Four Seasons and Hyatt and Holiday Inn to come into the business and then bring the brand standards up further. And I wish that for Airbnb. You wouldn't play a game if you didn't keep rules. We have to have a regulatory base. We have to protect our consumers. And I am concerned about some of the affordable housing issues. You know, when it becomes more compelling for a real estate developer to build apartments and use them for nightly rentals, that means that affordable housing for the people of Hawaii goes up. And that's already an issue on this island. And then there's also the issue of heritage and community. I mean, I like knowing my neighbors are my neighbors and live and work here. And if, you know, if vacation rentals are spotted throughout the community, it is impactful. I am not anti-vacation rentals. They just need to follow the same rules everybody else does.
And that was Howard Nussbaum, the president of the American Resort Development Association, who was in town for the Global Tourism Summit held at the Waikiki Convention Center this week.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, Moyer Financial, and Kaiser Permanente.
Thanks so much, Bill and Kuvehi. You know, joining us for today's reality check with our partners at Honolulu Civil Beat is reporter Anita Hofschneider. She has an update on our state's sexual harassment policies. Morning, Anita.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you know, when we first talked about this, it was the big to-do about House Speaker Josuke and the complaints that were filed against him. So I think at the time, everybody was surprised that the lawmakers kind of like you know, kick the can down the road. What's the latest?
So the latest is that both the House and the Senate are still working on changing their rules for how they handle sexual harassment complaints. And it's not a surprise that they're still working on this because, as you mentioned, we knew a few months ago that it was going to take a while for this to happen. But the question now is how much public input there should be in those changes. And it seems to be something that's largely happening internally, at least on the Senate side. And some lobbyists and others are kind of questioning whether that's the right way to go.
So are both houses approaching this a little differently?
Yes, they are. And so on the House side, they appointed a working group made up of three people with specialty knowledge in HR and in these types of issues. And they've been meeting a few times so far this year and trying to come up with recommendations. And last week, House Speaker Scott Sike sent a letter to House members and staff asking for any feedback on the existing rules. So they're at least making an effort to get some input from House members. But some people are saying, well, why did it take so long to send that letter? You know, you've been saying that you're going to change this for months now, and just now you're asking for input. And that input was specifically for staff and members. You know, there wasn't a letter sent to the broader community of people who do business at the legislature, including some of the lobbyists who have actually been reporting these sexual harassment complaints. And so on the Senate side, it's quite different. They are, you know, they didn't have a big scandal like the House. They're just having a attorney actually review their existing rules and do that internally, and then are planning to talk about it in the Democratic caucus later this year.
I think the whole issue of reporting, I mean, that was kind of a big sticking point, I think, with a lot of folks, right? Is it, if you report to the House Speaker and the Speaker is doing the harassment, you know, then what?
Exactly. And that was one of the big takeaways from the resignation of former House Speaker Suki. While some people who were outside of the Capitol were surprised about that, you know, what was sort of a bigger takeaway was that just how flawed the House's rules were. They didn't explicitly cover lobbyists or people doing business at the Capitol who were running into these situations. And more troublingly, they required complaints to go through the Speaker or the House Clerk, who generally, as a matter of practice, reported complaints to the Speaker. So there was really no incentive for reporting Suki as your harasser because of the role that he played, and because there, within the legislature, there was sort of no alternative avenue for that.
Okay, so we'll have to see then what the lawmakers in each house puts forth to the members come January.
Exactly. Well, hopefully we will know within the next month about what the new rules look like, and then they'll be voting on those when session starts again in January.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, Anita.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And we often bring you the reality check from Honolulu Civil Bee. Today, we featured reporter Anita Hofschneider. For her full story, log on to civilbee.org. They are just one shy of a basketball team. Four little monk seal pups are in the early stages of bonding. At the start of the summer, we introduced you to Sole, a little pup that was snatched up by marine fishery staff who worried that the little guy was too weak to survive out in the wild. Now, Sole isn't solitary. We first talked to Marine Mammal Recovery Center Director Claire Simeon when Sole arrived at the Big Island facility. And now we have this update on Sole and his new pals after their first week together.
Everybody's doing great. We still have Sole, who is the pup that we admitted from Molokai back in July. And several weeks later, we admitted another pup from Kauai, who was also a mom pup switch. So RK-58 was the pup of Rocky, celebrity seal mom, who gave birth on Waikiki last year. And unfortunately, she switched pups with another female, and even though NOAA officials were able to switch that pup back, RK-58 wasn't accepted back by Rocky, and so luckily we were able to admit him. And so he's been in for the past 8 weeks, and then just a couple weeks ago, we got two new patients, this time from the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and NOAA, the Science Center, takes a ship up twice a year to do surveys and field work, and really better understand the population, and they keep an eye out for seals that may be in need of coming into rehabilitation at Cape Kiola. So we have two additional prematurely weaned pups that are named Maya Pilo and Akuli Kuli for two of the native plants that grow up on Lay San, where they're from.
And so tell us, how are they getting along?
Well, you know, it's always an interesting process when you introduce seals. And luckily, we have the fact that these are young animals on our side, because as I'm sure you know, monk seals are typically very solitary animals. They don't congregate in big groups like you see with California sea lions or other marine mammals. But young pups do like to spend time with other animals. And when we first introduce them, we do it in a slow way so that it's the least amount of stress or making sure that the animals don't get overwhelmed. But luckily, it went really smoothly. So it's nice to have four because we have the ability to switch things up when we have either a pair together with another pair, or we can open up all of the gates and allow all four of them to swim in the pools together. And so it's really fun to see how they interact. And luckily, knock on wood, they've all gotten along really well.
Well, that's great. So they're all kind of hanging out, drinking fish milkshakes.
Exactly. Not too bad. And gaining good amounts of weight and just preparing to, you know, to go back out into the wild.
So how's Soleil doing? I mean, because when you got him, he was about 60 pounds. Is he close to being let go?
He is. He's getting close. So actually, since he arrived, which was about 2 months ago, he's gained about 40 pounds. And so he now weighs close to 100, actually. And so while he's still not as robust as other seals his age, he's looking much more filled out and much more like a normal seal. And, you know, he's gone through the molt process, because when seals are first born, they have a black coat. And after about a month or so, they molt that into the nice silver coat that we know so well for most of the seals on the beach. And so he's gaining good weight. He's getting up to speed. His physical exams and his blood work have all been unremarkable, and he looks healthy. So it should be just a short amount of time more before he's ready to go back to the wild.
And how's he doing chasing fish? Because I think when we last talked, he didn't really know what to do with them.
Right. And luckily, we've been able to introduce a lot of live prey, so a lot of live fish or sea cucumbers, which young seals really like to play with. And I'm really happy to report that he's able to successfully catch and kill and eat live fish. So that's a big step for him. And that will really help. You know, we want to keep introducing those live prey items, because that'll help them learn the behaviors that they really need once they're back on the beach and back in the ocean.
And I'm sure the other little pups then will have someone to look up to and figure out, okay, is that what I need to do with the fish?
That's what we hope, you know, and that is one of the things that's helpful about having multiple animals in at the hospital, is that, you know, there are so many instinctual behaviors that we as humans can't teach them. And so there's really no replacement for them getting to watch an animal who really knows what they're doing. And so that is helpful. And we try to maximize the amount of time that all the younger animals can spend around Soleil and around RK-58.
So how many male, female are we talking here?
We have three boys, three males and one female. And of the two newest pups, one female, she's already started eating on her own. She's really feisty. She's actually competing with Soleil, and when he's eating, she's stealing some of his food. And then the youngest boy he's still receiving his fish milkshakes, but he's starting to show interest in what the others are doing.
Well, that's great. And so do you obviously then have the space to be able to handle all these pups at one time?
We do. Luckily, so Cape Kiola was built in 2014, and we have four pens and pools, and it's all covered, and so we're sort of under an enclosure. So animals are protected from direct sunlight, and it's a bit cooler since we are right down on the lava fields in Kona. And all of the water comes from being in the Natural Energy Lab, so we get that nice, cool, deep seawater access to that. And we have a capacity for about 10 animals, depending on the size what kind of care they need. But we've got two deep pools that are about 10 feet deep, and then two shallower pools where animals can first come in and they're debilitated. But then once they transition and they're able to swim in those deep pools, they really enjoy spending a lot of time there swimming around.
So our little team here, how much time do you think they'll have together before Soleil gets returned to the wild?
You know, we're in discussions with NOAA and with our partners right now, with the Coast Guard that really helps us to transport these animals around the island. And so everything is looking really good with Soleil and with RK-58. And so we're looking at logistics and windows of when we might be able to release them. And it's hard to say right now, but I think that they'll probably all be together for at least a couple more weeks.
Oh, okay. Oh, but that's short. Gosh.
Yeah, relatively short. And so we want to make sure that everybody's stable, that Soleil really, you know, is continuing to gain weight on a good trajectory. And we don't want to rush that process because we want that release to be a successful one.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, then they'll just hang out, play, sleep.
Yeah. It's not a bad life for them to, you know, get three meals a day and get to gain a lot of weight and figure out how to be a seal. That's their main job when they're in the hospital here. So hopefully we're giving them lots of chances to do that.
Is this the most number of little guys that you've had around?
Actually, a couple of years ago, we had 7 animals at the same time. And that was pretty chaotic. And luckily, you know, we have a wonderful team of volunteers and staff and visiting staff from our headquarters in Sausalito, California. But, you know, when you have that many animals, especially when they're not eating on their own, it's really time intensive. And so this 4 is definitely a busy time for us, you know, but we are thanking our stars that we don't have 7 or 8 right now, because that would be even more of a challenge.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for taking care of those guys.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for checking in.
That was Dr. Claire Simeon, veterinarian at the Marine Mammal Recovery Center on the Big Island. She says they can always use more volunteers at the facility, so if you have time, please do. Stay tuned for updates on the seal pup saga. Now back over to Pledge Central with Bill and Kuvehi.